The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, as the highly anticipated European and local elections draw near on Friday, it's a critical week for politicians. A recent poll by Ireland Thinks for the Sunday Independent showed a 7-point drop in support for Sinn Féin, placing them neck and neck with Fine Gael at 22%. So with pressing issues like housing and immigration dominating the political landscape, and the electorate's impatience for change is palpable. And joining me now in studio to talk about various topics that are coming up on the doorsteps and Sinn Féin's vision for the future is Mary Lou MacDonald, leader of Sinn Féin, and Teachtá Dála for the Dublin Central constituency. Mary Lou, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you.
You have other things on your mind today, as it happens.
I do. Today is the big day for all the Leaving Cert students and Junior Cert, it should be said. So the very best of luck to them. I know all of the households like ourselves who have somebody doing the exam, it feels like you're doing it with them. So good luck to everybody.
Now,
best of luck to them.
The examination of your party, of course, continues and it will continue on the doorsteps until after Friday and beyond, because a general election is not too many months away. What is your analysis of the poll results? Because it's not just one poll, it's a series of polls showing a decline in support.
So having been pretty much everywhere in the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks, I've had an opportunity to talk to lots and lots of people. And what I'm detecting, Pat, is a sense that there was a great energy and momentum for change back in 2020, as you will recall. Sinn Féin had a very strong day out. There was a real hope that we would see a new government, a government of change. That didn't happen. And in the intervening 4 years, people have struggled with a cost of living crisis. The housing crisis is real and bearing down on people, our young people in particular, but it's touching every part of society.
You've gone big on these issues, and yet your support declines.
So the point then, I think for some people, there is now an impatience for change and almost in some quarters a weariness and a question mark, will this change ever actually happen? The poll that you referred to, I think, crystallises the essential dynamic that we now have in politics and the essential choice. On Friday in the local and European elections, although they won't change the government, and then in the general election. And it boils down to this, when all of the noise is removed, whether you choose for Sinn Féin and a government led by Sinn Féin that then has to deliver, or another 5 years of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. That's essentially the dynamic still.
But that won't be happening on Friday. But again,
no, it won't.
Your analysis.
No, it won't be happening on Friday. But and we're clear that local and European elections don't change the government, but it can be. And I hope that it is the first step in getting that new government.
It would be a strong the win, perhaps, for all the parties. How you do on Friday, be it in Europe or locally, it will maybe determine the course of the election to come in.
But it's also, I think, for people after 4 years of frustration, 4 years really of not seeing significant movement on the important things, a chance for the first time to come out
back
again
to
and
the
make
question,
their mark.
Though, certainly. Your analysis of where the support has gone. And why? Why has it left you?
Well, look, we still have very significant, we have very strong support out on the ground. and for me, Pat, my focus and my effort has to be on the issues at hand. I mean, whatever our polling number is, doesn't change the fact that you're knocking on doors and adults who are stuck at home with their parents are saying, I am stuck here. I cannot afford rent. I cannot buy a home. And unless you guys get in and change it, I am leaving Ireland. That, to me, is unacceptable
still,
and alarming.
The head scratcher. The head scratcher. Where has my support gone? You must be asking yourself.
Some people are considering, obviously, the independence. There's a long tradition in local and European elections for the independents to score well. Actually, if you look at the current figures, if you take Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Greens and the Independents, they hold 80% of the local seats in councils across the state. So voting that way doesn't represent a big or radical departure far from it. And of course, independents have propped up this government and kept them in office. Some are thinking of doing that. I would just invite people who are thinking in that way to just reflect on where we need to go and the extent of change that we need to deliver. And it remains my view, my contention, and the numbers still reflect the fact that for the big change to happen at a local level and in government, Sinn Féin needs to lead that change. We need to work with others, but we need to lead that change.
Do you suspect, because many people will, that some of your support has leaked away to those people who are campaigning vigorously to stop immigration? And that Sinn Féin's position on immigration has been not abundantly clear.
Well, let me deal with that first. Our position on immigration has been clear and articulated for a very, very long time. I mean, I've been setting out our stall on this as far back as 2006 and 2007, Pat. And our position is that you need a system where decisions are taken efficiently and quickly. You need a system that is fair and respectful to individuals and to communities. And you need a rule book and rules that are actually applied and enforced. And that has been our consistent position for the longest time. We don't agree with the government in terms of the EU Migration Pact. There are parts of it, two parts specifically, that we believe make sense for Ireland to tie into. The rest doesn't. Unlike other European countries, we are in a common travel area with our nearest neighbour. Therefore, we need the flexibility to be able to respond to our very particular circumstances.
So what do you not like about the pact?
And in any event, we need, I think, decisions on something as important as immigration are best taken here domestically by people who are elected by the Irish people.
So what is it about the pact that you don't
like? Well, we're unique along, well, not unique. Ourselves and Denmark have the ability to opt out of provisions, and we should avail of it. My main bugbear with it is that it just restricts us too much and ties us in a way that will not allow us to respond to the fact that we have a common travel area with Britain. And I have to say, the government, I think, have not paid enough attention to that fact. We want the common travel area to endure. As you know, I'm an Irish Republican. I'm for a united Ireland. I don't want a border on our island. But
weren't there noises within your own party about more border controls?
No.
I heard, I can't quote the individuals, but there were people saying that close to the border, you do need more border checks.
No. I think what had come up was the question of cooperation between the PSNI and the Gardaí. That cooperation is as old as the common travel area itself. And of course, they cooperate on all manner of issues. But to be clear, there can be no question of a remilitarisation of that border. My God, we spent years through the whole Brexit debacle, which I discussed on many occasions with you, Pat, making sure that there would be no hardening of the border and that life, particularly for border communities, would not be impeded, that work and business and travel and family relationships would not be disrupted.
But
and we need
question,
to guard that vigilantly.
It is an open border. It is an absolutely open border.
Absolutely.
300
yeah.
plus border crossings. Mm-hmm. So there's no way to seal it, even with, you know, random Garda patrols in cooperation with the PSNI. And what is to persuade the authorities in Northern Ireland that if we do come across people on a bus or in a car, on a truck, who should not be entering the EU, what is to persuade them that they should be taken back?
Well, look, there does have to be an agreement between Dublin and London on this matter. And very unfortunately, the government here in Dublin walked us into an awful haymaker in that regard. And actually, and it's very unpleasant when Dublin is made a laughingstock of in Westminster. I don't think any of us enjoy being the butt of the Tory jokes. That said,
this was when they invited us to share in their Rwanda scheme.
Yes, I mean, they made an absolute mess of that. That's done now. We need to move on. There will be, I believe, a change of government in London. I think that's most probable. And then there has to be a discussion with the administration in London about a safe return of people. That's where that needs to rest. But the big challenge for us, Pat, is to have a system in this state that actually works. And you can see the evidence of the government's failure in people sleeping in tents on Mount Street and along the canal. Nobody wants to see that. That is utterly unacceptable.
What would you do with them?
The government know
I mean,
what they need to do.
I mean, would you unpitch those tents and scrap them? And
the government have known for years now what they needed to do. They were told by Catherine Day that they had to construct properly constituted reception centres. This is not new. They were told this years ago. They failed to do that. They predicted large numbers of people coming from Ukraine and elsewhere. That transpired. But the same government that had made that prediction had failed comprehensively to put together any kind of workable plan. And worse than that, Pat, and for me, this is the biggest failure of all. They failed to engage with communities, to have a respectful conversation about new people coming into to areas, to listen carefully and to provide the kinds of resources for school places, access to dental services, GP services, the things that people rely on, that naturally had to be beefed up when new people were coming onto the system.
In practical terms, if there are, 30,000 people coming this year who are seeking asylum, where would you put them?
Well,
Do you see tented towns all over the country?
No, I don't think we want that. I think there has to be emergency accommodation, where it is tented, appropriate tented accommodation, it can't be on street curbs and it can't be along the Grand Canal.
No, do you see it scattered across the country? Because obviously there aren't that many green spaces in the capital, which are not public parks, for amenities, if you like.
Yeah, I think the government came at it late in terms of making use of some lands that are held by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Defence and military facilities. And that is not ideal. Far from, I don't see anybody living in tents. I think it's, I think it's outrageous. But given that they have failed to do what needed to be done, where you have to take that emergency decision, you don't leave people for weeks and weeks on the side of a street in tents that the state provides and then the state scoops up. The whole thing has been a mess. So the immigration issue is coming up on the doors, Pat, more so in some areas than others. It is an issue. It's not the issue. Housing, the cost of living are the issues. But the immigration question is there, and people have concerns. A small, tiny minority have sought to weaponize this issue and to create a very toxic, loud atmosphere around it. But most people, and I've spoken to a lot of people on this issue, are practical, reasonable and decent. And their big complaint to me is that in this government, they don't see anybody actually in charge with a sense of planning and a sense of purpose.
Simon Harris would maintain that he's the one in charge, that he's become, if you like, instant in terms of his responses to the various crises where there might have been a tardiness before.
Well,
of course. Do you see that in him?
Well, of course, Simon Harris is a member of cabinet for what, 8 or 9 years? So the idea of trying to play new kid on the block or a new broom that sweeps clean doesn't really tally with the facts. I think it's a classic case of spin.
Some of the texts coming in. It's immigration, Pat. Sinn Féin's core support are society's net beneficiaries of social payments. They see immigrants as competition. Ask why all parties will always blame current government for the problems and then they say it'll take time to fix. 4 years later and getting worse every time. Sinn Féin's stance on the referendum and their wavering views on immigration is what's losing them votes. Another one, the Sinn Féin voter base is predominantly in working class areas. Anti-immigrant sentiment is also highest in working class areas. There is a conundrum here that Sinn Féin simply cannot solve.
Okay, can I just deal with that? Can I just say very directly and just sound a word of caution? A word of caution in the stereotype that suggests that working class people or working class communities are somehow more prone to toxic views than middle class or better off. That's not actually true. And people need to be careful with that. You know, the respectable veneer of middle class Ireland, that there can't be some fairly toxic views there as well. Our support base now comes from every walk of life, Pat. And if you look at the slate of candidates that we're fielding for the local elections, 335 of them. Our youngest candidate is 18. Our oldest candidate is 78. She's a former teacher. She's running for the first time. And they are literally from every... So we draw support and we seek to represent people from every walk of life. There are people who, because of a lack of housing, because of pressure on resources, whether it's looking for an assessment of needs for your child or a surgical intervention if your child has scoliosis or whatever the case may be, who, of course, are under more pressure than others. But I think it's really unfair to say that therefore they are more likely to have views ascribed to them by some of those textures. I just don't accept that.
You've talked about housing as being on the doorsteps all the time. And the proposal for a 300,000 euro house in the Dublin area, pie in the sky. I mean, for that to happen, the market would have to collapse.
No.
And if the market collapsed, you know what that would mean for the economy.
Well, so to be clear, all of us know what a market collapse in housing looks and feels like, a negative equity. It was brought to you, listeners, courtesy of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. So we're not going back to that place. What we are talking about here, Pat, is a cohort of people, and it's a large section of people, who earn too much money to get access to a council house, if there were council houses to be got, and who earn too little to be able to afford a mortgage and the kind of prices you're seeing on the market now. So we want a scheme led by government that caters for those people. So people working in retail, so the carers, so the teachers, nurses, will actually have a prospect of buying their own home.
And how will that be done? I mean, who pays the difference? Are you talking about everyone who pays taxes paying the difference between the economic cost of that house and the actual low price of 300,000?
How it would work is that the state would absorb all of the land-related costs. So utilities, the servicing of the land and so on. And the purchaser pays for the cost of construction. And that will come in 300 and a little bit less depending on the part of Dublin. And of course, less when you move outside.
So the cost of the site itself.
Capital.
And does the state maintain its equity?
The state, yes. The state maintains ownership of the land. The house belongs to the person to sell, to extend, to bequeath to their children, their grandchildren, all of that. They have full ownership.
And when they flog
the
it, does the state take back that share?
And when, if they can also sell, and as and when the house is sold, obviously the state's interest in terms of ownership of the land is taken account of. So you're not going to make a huge, if you like, killing on the sale of the house necessarily. But this is the gateway for people who are currently have no prospect. And I meet them, you have to meet them yourself. Yeah. I'm sure you know them too, Pat, who currently have no prospect of buying a home. And by the way, as to your point on pie in the sky, I would just remind you, in their last general election manifesto, Fianna Fáil promised 50,000 homes at 250,000 euros. I would challenge you to find me even one of them. They totally walked away from that promise.
Mm. Something else that may or may not come up on the doorsteps, I'm not sure, but it's prompted by a question from a listener. Would Sinn Féin welcome in refugees who are fleeing Gaza? Now, we are the friend officially now of the Palestinian nation. If there is a mass exodus of people from Gaza on foot of a ceasefire, etc., etc., would Sinn Féin welcome those Gazan refugees here?
People who come here and who apply through the process, go through the process, and there is a huge, huge affinity and a huge solidarity, as you have said, with the Gazans, with Palestine. And that's been the Irish position for a very, very long time. We have always been friends of Palestine. Just in terms of a mass exit from Gaza, just remember this. Gazans do not want to leave.
No,
for many reasons.
But I'm just saying there will be a period of reconstruction, which means that people will need temporary places to go for years.
But just watch this point, because this is the politics of Palestine. Gazans, and not just Gazans, people who live in the West Bank, who live in Jerusalem, Palestinians hold on to their land and their homesteads very, very dearly. Why? Because the Israeli state breaks international with illegal settlements, illegal annexation. They literally bulldoze down their homes, bulldoze down their olive groves. So the idea of an exodus from Gaza is hugely politically loaded. Gazans, in my opinion, Palestinians, in my strong opinion, are very, very unlikely to exodus because they know that Israel is involved in an occupation that they would very, very happily extend.
No, but
so it's not a simple question.
No,
here.
I'm not saying that there will be masses of, you know, families exiting, but there may be one person who will be responsible for hanging on to the patch of land or the apartment or the house in Gaza. And the rest
and
of others, the family.
And of course, guys, the people of Palestine, of course, need to be supported in every possible way by the Irish people, but also by the international community. And remember, the Palestinians, they are a refugee population, a displaced population that are refused the right of return. So when you're talking about Palestine in particular, the idea of fleeing or leaving or in exodus, as you put it, is hugely, hugely politically complex because they have experienced
the
for decades.
From the listeners, the question was, would you open the doors to Palestinians?
Well, the answer, the doors
in
are
huge numbers.
The doors are open to Palestinians. And more than that, the important solidarity that we give is for a ceasefire now, an end to the genocide, reconstruction, freedom for Palestine, and stand with Palestinians, not just in Ireland, but in Palestine itself.
Some of the comments coming in, build thousands of houses, absolutely no hope. I'm waiting 4 weeks for a plumber. How can the government own the land and not the property on the land? This is a part of your...
Well, in the same way that if you own an apartment, you own the apartment, but, you know, the land, not the land under it. I mean, this is a scheme that we are proposing. It will be novel. It is different. And it is the smart use of public land for the public good to give, let me repeat, to people who currently have no prospect of accessing and purchasing a home of their own, to give them that option. It'll for that cohort of people. Of course, in solving the housing crisis in its totality, and we've said this again and again, of course, you also need private developers, smaller contractors working at full tilt. So sorting out procurement, planning, access to finance, all of these things need to be lined up. There is so much work to be done. And the Housing Commission, literally through the book at the current government, they are scathing of the current government's performance. And that cannot continue for the next 5 years.
The Help to Buy scheme, is it still your idea
we
to abolish
it? We don't support that. We think it's the wrong policy approach. We accept that where people have made application and been accepted to it, that we can't have just a drop-off or a cliff edge. So we're looking at how you phase that out. But to be clear, we don't support that approach. It doesn't work.
All right. The scheme is unkind, so therefore you're giving us false hope. Unlikely, the scheme, I think that's probably what they mean, that it's unlikely to actually come to fruition were you to get to power. First of all, the state's got to buy all this land or procure it somehow. And when the state's buying stuff, who determines the price? The market?
Well, look, the state has. There's been an ongoing debate in political life here around the use of land that is currently held by various state agencies.
So your idea
and
is to build all these houses on existing state-owned land?
Yes.
Like where, for instance? Because the capital is where the housing is most acute. So where
particularly? And there is significant land bank everywhere that we have it, Pat. And the debate has been, here's the difference between us and government. The government believe that you rely solely on the private developers to solve the housing crisis. We accept that private developers, from the bigger players to the small contractors, have an absolutely important role in that. And we want to assist them and help them and get them at full tilt and beyond. But we also know that the state needs to step in. And there is a shortage of council housing.
Where are you suggesting they build?
I'm suggesting that we build on all existing, public lands that are held.
For example, what public lands? You're not talking about the Phoenix Park.
Of course, you know, I'm not talking about the Phoenix Park.
Of course not. So where are you talking about?
The Land Development Agency holds that portfolio of land at the moment. In our view...
But give us a few examples of around the capital where you would build on state land. Where is that land?
It's out there, but Pat, I don't have a list in front of me. You're trying to bounce me on
That's fair enough. No, but I'm just wondering if there's anything...
Just on that issue, it's actually for parties that aren't in government, when you go to the various local authorities and agencies, it's hard actually to get an absolutely definitive map of exactly what is held by the various state agencies. But it's out there. And we have seen cases, landmark cases like Devney Gardens, other city centre sites, where there was a ferocious battle around the most effective, intelligent, equitable use of public lands.
All right, Mary Lou MacDonald, the leader of Sinn Féin, thank you very much for joining us.
Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.